Greetings, Adventure, and welcome back to a special episode of Return to EverQuest, a podcast where we revisit and discuss the classic game of EverQuest. In today's special episode, I'm going to be joined by my co-host Derek, Carlos, and our special guest, Zaid God. Zaid is an EverQuest streamer, a guild leader, and a lore master extraordinaire. So before we dive into our interview, we want to thank Zaid for being here today. Thank you all for listening to our show and taking the time to subscribe and rate our show. And with that, Zaid, welcome to Return to EverQuest. Thank you for coming on the show and offering to chat with us about your experiences with EverQuest. And I hear you have some big plans with the new TLP server, Mischief. So to begin, why don't you introduce yourself to our audience and tell them a little bit about where they can find you and how you're connected to EverQuest.
Hey guys, thanks for having me. Appreciate you guys inviting me on the podcast. It's a really great experience. I'm Zaid. I'm just a normal EQ player like anybody else, really. I created a guild, I guess now like 10 plus years ago, called Faceless, and it's had a few different iterations over the years. It's been pretty successful. Faceless was the second progression guild ever to make it all the way from the start of a TLP server to live. As of this moment, they, I believe, are the only guild, but there are two other guilds that are about to make that transition too. But the last time before us that somebody did it was like 2007. So quite the feat. And I was involved in that to varying extents, but definitely do not deserve any credit in that other than creating the guild all those years ago. Other than that, I really love the lore of EverQuest. I've been playing it since I was 9 years old. And, you know, I wouldn't say I've become good at it, but I've dedicated a lot of time to it. And I have developed the ability to play for a long time. So, you know, I get things done, I guess.
That's dedication.
Yeah, that's hardcore. 9 years old. You have me beat. I think I started in seventh grade. So it's a little bit older. But yeah, that's incredible. And let's move on to our first topic here then. You mentioned it before. You're a guild master or guild leader by trade normally. So the new TLP, Mischief, there's a lot of chatter about it and this new guild that you're going to be leading there. Can you tell us a little bit about both what the new Mischief TLP is and what makes it so exciting and kind of what your plans are for the guild there?
Yep, absolutely. So Mischief is going to be one of the coolest servers that we've ever seen. EQ really does not do super unique servers very often. If you look at the time-locked progression servers, which has kind of been our bread and butter for the last 10 or so years, the first one was really 2007. It was the Combine server. They had an overflow server called Sleeper, and then they waited until 2011 to launch another one where they did Fippy and Vulak. Then they had like 3 years. They did Ragefire and Lockjaw. At this time, they had a new lead producer, Holly Longdale, and she, I think, saw the potential of TLP, saw the revenue growth, and they started putting them out every year, if not more often than every year. And so because of this increase in tempo, we've seen the TLP community kind of solidify and everyone just stays around and we wait for the next one every year. And so things have been really hyped, but the rule sets really don't change that much. It's usually like how long you spend in an expansion might change a little bit, 3 months, 6 months, or even less, 1 month. But the rules are more or less standard EQ. Mischief flips all that on its head. It is Ferona Violute rules, which is to say everything is free trade. There are very few items that you cannot trade. So all the cool stuff that you used to have to loot in person can now be sold, traded. When you have like your raid gear and you have a new member coming in, you can pass some raid gear down to them, or you make a new character, you can pass raid loot down to them, no matter what the level is. But even crazier, what makes it truly unique is that there is a randomized loot element to the server. So with all named mobs, all rare mobs, we're not sure exactly how it'll work yet because they're trying to keep a lid on it, keep it secret. When you kill a mob, it can drop another mob's loot table. There's going to be some level range in effect, but we don't know what it is. I'm guessing it's about 5 levels up and down. So a level 20 named could drop stuff from any named between level 15 and 25.
So that's like, you know, Emperor Crush. You know, he's around level 18-ish or whatever. So if you kill him, he normally, you know, drops a piece of gear or whatnot. He may not drop that. He may drop something else from another creature that's a rare creature. Level 18. Interesting. Okay.
And the example I like to use, actually, is Emperor Crush, because he's super common. You know exactly where he's going to spawn. And, you know, Dwarven Ringmail Tunic is okay, but not incredible. But Pizjin in Kanos Hills is extremely rare, and she drops the Glowing Black Stone, plus 9 intelligence, 10 save versus magic. Really great item in Classic, arguably best in slot, and now can drop off of Emperor Crush, probably, instead of this ultra-rare mob that people camp all day. So that's just one element. The possibilities, you know, all the scenarios we can think of are really endless. So we're super excited, but it expands even more, not just named mobs, but also to raid mobs within the same expansion. But yeah, so like normally Finny has a relatively underwhelming loot table, but for all we know, he could be dropping Planet Sky loot, Naggafin loot, Vox loot, Khazix Thul loot, Innaruk loot, Draco Lich, all the stuff potentially could be on Finny. I don't know that the level spread that we talked about with the named mobs is going to be as strict with raid mobs because a lot of the raid mobs are coupled together in weird ways. Like if you said it was a 5-level spread for Classic, well, the gods would just swap loot tables and the dragons would swap loot tables and that would be about it. So it wouldn't be super interesting. But really, we don't see unique servers in EQ a lot. The last time I saw a server that was as unique as this, I think, was the Discord server. And I mean, that was like, maybe that might have been so long ago. It was before WoW came out, or it was like right around the time that WoW came out. So, I mean, we're talking 15 years ago, you know what I mean? And the Discord server was just a permadeath server that came out. So super rare that you get this opportunity to play on a server like this. And anybody who misses it, I promise you, you'll regret it. You got to at least give it a swing.
So I got some other follow-up questions here then. So I get the randomized loot. That is pretty interesting. And I think Derek's going to touch on some aspects of that later on, some questions. Mine is for the Ferona Vi typeness. So I made a character on live because my buddy Steven, who is a good friend of mine and was on the first episode's podcast, he said, hey, make a character on Ferona Vi. I went there and I realized like the economy was so jacked up. Like there's like, you know, you have the flowing black robe for 1,000,000 platinum. And so I don't know if that was because of the no trade like rules or not. And so my question is, do you think, and I think this goes to how you're operating guild, will the economy be different than normal economies or do we expect it to be the same? What is your take on that?
I think it's going to be way different than normal servers. The big thing here is that there are so many more items on the economy that normally can't be sold or you have a hard time selling them, right? But also the way you can trade everything around, it just means that everything is going to be much more active. It's going to be a more vibrant economy. There's going to be more sellers, more buyers. The randomized loot means it's actually harder to go camp a single piece of gear that you want, which means you might be better off in some cases farming platinum and then going to the tunnel and seeing who else got lucky and got the item that you want to buy. It's going to be probably the craziest economy we've ever seen, but I think that's a good thing. More buying and selling means more interaction between players. More interaction between players is basically what EverQuest is about, right? It's the massive in the MMO. That's what we all came here for. We're not trying to play Skyrim. We want to interact with each other. And the economy is just one facet of that. So the more vibrant it is, the better the server is.
That's some pretty good points. Okay, I like that. Yeah, I like that. You know, so let's kind of segue. So I see the economy now. Very, very vibrant, very different. And I heard that your guild, when you do raids, you're going to do something with that. And I thought it was pretty interesting. So I'll let you enlighten us kind of how you're spinning this is normally dragon points, I guess, on its head, and you're doing something a little different.
Right. So normally when you raid with guilds, most guilds these days use DKP or dragon kill points. But instead of that, we're flipping it a little bit and we're doing plat raids or what people call GDKP. In some MMOs. So that means that when you come to one of our raids, you kill a dragon and then the loot drops, right? We don't say, hey, bid this imaginary currency that we give you. We say bid real in-game currency. And then at the end of the night, we split all that currency to everyone who showed up and raided. So you're spending real currency in real EverQuest currency. You are gaining real EverQuest currency. And it's really critical on this server because remember, you could take that currency and use it anywhere. Any other guild is selling loot and everything. Your DKP with my guild is good buying stuff from them too. If you're in a DKP guild, you're trapped. You can only use it for what your guild produces. But why would you want to close yourself off on a server with this kind of rule set? Our guild is giving you the most opportunity to leverage your DKP, your time spent raiding, and use it to produce value for you. So that's kind of what we're looking at.
Interesting. So like, if I'm a Shadow Knight and I go on the raid and an item drops, it's good for a cleric. Even though I don't get the item or I don't get a Shadow Knight item, I'm going to get some platinum if I'm max level in your guild and I'm on the raid. I'm going to be able to take that plat and then go buy like a Shadow Knight item with it somewhere else. So it makes it, it incentivizes people to go raid because you're all going to get something from it. I think that's, you know, I think that's actually pretty neat because I remember like sometimes I'm like, man, what if I don't want to go on a raid? I just think in conception because I haven't really done a lot of raiding, but like, what if I don't want to go and just wait around all night for an item I don't need or that I'm going to get outbid on? I think this is pretty interesting. What do you guys think, Derek and Carlos, about that?
Yeah, why don't you think, Zayd, why don't you think a majority of other guilds have adopted that system?
I think people in general, you know, tend to be risk averse. There's a little fear. We've got one or two other guilds who have decided to go with it this time. But yeah, for the most part, people stay on the path that is well traveled. And, you know, after this server, where we're going to blow it up and we're going to make it really big, and some of the other guilds are doing it too, that's when I think in the future you'll start to see this become much more common in the community. Though it has been gaining more and more traction over the years. So we're like, you know, by no means are we responsible for the concept. We're just going to use it here, and I think it's going to be a huge success. But yeah, I think generally people are just a little bit risk averse.
Yeah, I agree.
That makes sense. I think it makes it a lot more inclusive when it comes to the raids. So yeah. It's pretty exciting the way that that system will work.
It's also an insurance policy built right in. If our guild dies, you know, 2 months into the server, well, your DKP and any other guild, when your guild goes under, now you got a big pocket full of nothing, right?
With us,
all that platinum is good anywhere you go.
That's a great point.
So what are you all looking at in terms of like on day one? Let's use the first week because, you know, day one, it might crash and all craziness. But in the first week, what is Faceless Virtue going to be looking like? What do you envision it? Like if you were to sit here and tell me, I'm predicting in the future, in the first week, we have this many members and this is kind of what we're doing. I'm just curious what your prediction would be. And we could, you know, when that happens, you can come back and listen and see how accurate you were. So let's see.
Within days from launch, we'll have killed every single raid mob in Classic, and we will be on farm status. We will be splitting our raids to maximize loot intake. We will have over 400 members and a steady supply of applicants attempting to join. And yeah, I think that's about it. I mean, we're going to have a lot of people level 50 by like Saturday, I would say.
Damn, that's hardcore. I was very fascinated, you know, again, as a casual EverQuest player. And I, you know, before we started recording, we talked, you're in the military, I'm in the military too. And I started to see like the organization of the guild that you guys have. You have these spreadsheets, you have, you know, if you're going to be playing all the time, here's your static group. I mean, it was like a military operation from front to back. Like, you guys are going to crush it. So how much planning like actually went into that? Because that's a massive effort. So behind the scenes, you and the other leaders of that guild, how much effort is going to the organization and planning of execution?
This honestly hasn't been as super detailed as some of our previous launches have been, because it's a little bit old hat. You know what I mean? We've done it a lot now. So it used to be before a server launch, I was like 24/7 scrawling plans on the wall. You know what I mean? Just like going over every possible detail. But nowadays, it's like an old friend when you come into launch. And a lot of the people have raided with us on every single server that we've been on for years and years. So they kind of get the flow of things. But so it still is a lot of planning. What we're working to do this time, which will be a little bit different for us, is we are trying to automate as much of the guild administration as possible. Today, most of my morning, we were working on a Discord integrated bot, which will automatically create raids for us. So everyone will just type, hey, slash, they'll type exclamation mark raid, join or something like that in the Discord. And it'll take their character, map it to their class. And after they're all done, I type end raid and it forms all the groups automatically. And then in just 2 seconds, you know, we've done that process and everyone invites their groups. I send out the raid invite. Boom. Every single raid is formed. It doesn't matter how many people you add to the mix. It's the same amount of time to get it all done. So normally when you want to form a raid, like because of dynamic zones, and stop me if I'm losing you anywhere, but yeah, because of dynamic zones where you can create an instance of, say, permafrost, and you can fight five Lady Voxes, right? You might have a guild, and you split it up. You split up your raid force into the smallest group that can kill Lady Vox successfully, and you have all those raids going at the same time. But you got to like invite all the people one by one or group by group, and then all the raid leaders have to look and say, okay, like that warrior needs to be over here because I don't have enough tanks. That shit could take like an hour or more. But this tool is going to automate that. And we're not the first guild to look at automating admin items and stuff, but I think we're going to attempt to automate the processes that a guild has to spend time on to a greater degree than any guild before us. And our intention right now is once we got it all dialed in where we want it, we're going to make it completely open source and give it to everybody. So
DKP. That's amazing. That's awesome. And to kind of end my section of questions on a lighter note, with all this, this is very like technical. It shows the amount of expertise in the guild. Does that mean that there is room for casual players?
Yeah, absolutely. It actually, the automation and the level of expertise helps us more easily welcome casual players. And honestly, this is a casual incarnation of our guild. Normally, we would have like a bat phone, and this will be the first time I'm actually going to say this anywhere, but we're probably going to add a bat phone here. You guys know what a bat phone is?
Yeah. Enlighten us. Is it like where you wait around at night and you get a phone call, okay, and it's like hands on deck kind of deal?
Like the red
exactly
phone for
it's
the
like you know, Batman has his little light in the sky. That's, you know, okay, we have one for our guild. And basically everyone gets a text message. And no matter what time it is, it says, hey, Lady Vox has spawned. And everyone logs in all at once and kills Lady Vox. And you go back to bed. Because these dragons have like a 24-hour respawn variance. You know what I mean? You got to have some one person tracking. But yeah, that's pretty much it. That's the hardcore aspect. And we were originally not going to do that for this one, but we are going to add probably an opt-in option for a bat phone. So not everyone has to do it, but if you want to, it's there. But anyway, back to your question. It is very casual friendly, especially because with the plat raids and everything, you don't need a certain raid attendance. Your DKP is whatever you want it to be. You know what I mean? If you miss a raid, you don't really lose out on anything. So it's totally open, show up, raid. All you need to do is know how to play your class a little bit. And if you don't know what you need to be doing on raids, it's super easy to just say, hey, what do you need me as like a shaman or a monk to be doing right now? And because we have a wealth of talented, experienced players, super easy for anybody to show you. The only initiative that someone needs to take is they need to not be afraid to ask for help.
Nice. Well, I'll say, I'll pass it on to Derek here, but I'm excited to join. I'm a casual player. You know, I got my job. I write Dungeons and Dragons adventures. I have my family and three kids, so I'm busy, but I am going to make some time at night to casually play a little bit more EQ on Mischief to try it out. And I'll be in the guild there looking to see how it performs. And I'm excited to be a part of it. So
you're just going to have to make sure he knows. Make sure he knows how to play his class first before you let him in.
All right, Derek, over to you, man.
All right, Zaid. I think your guild's going to do great, man. I really like the organization and concept behind it. I'm skeptical on the Mischief server, and maybe you can convince me otherwise. So my two main gripes are, number one, won't this new rule set encourage a server population to only frequent a handful of zones? And by that, I mean, why would anyone go to a difficult zone like, let's say, Plane of Sky for specific loot when they could just go to, let's say, Nagafin's lair and farm the same loot there?
So for that first question, I think that's a problem that we've had for a couple years now. So a while back, they introduced this thing called pick zones. Basically, when you're in a zone and it reaches a certain threshold, it will create another public version of that zone. So if 50 people go into Guk, it'll spawn Guk 2. And then if 50 more people show up, Guk 3, 4. And in the height of the server's popularity, you can go to Guk and you'll see like Guk 59. You're like, what in the world? I think that's actually a super negative thing. Personally, I think there should be a cap on how many pick zones there should be able to be, because what happens is players map out the most effective routes to level 50.
Yeah.
And they have no incentive to deviate from those routes. And you know, EverQuest is a world. It's meant to be explored and experienced. You should be adventuring. And it's not an adventure if 10,000 people are in Unrest or Lower Guk. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That is a problem. But the good thing is, it used to be that Guk was the best loot and the best EXP, but now you can get the same loot from Guk from pretty much anywhere else. So it helps in some ways. When it comes to raid gear, though, it's a little bit different. Because there's such a limited supply of raid content available, especially early on, people are still incentivized to tackle all the raid challenges they can, including the most difficult stuff, just to generate more loot for their organization. So I think people will still do that. And ultimately, I do think that we will see people branch out into those other zones just to find, you know, one of the good things is that, like, dungeon zones, which people usually go to camp loot, tend to have long respawn timers. We're talking 20 to 30 minutes. And then, you know, you might get the placeholder, you might get the named. Outdoor zones with rare mobs tend to have really fast respawn timers, like 6 minutes, all the way down to like maybe 30 seconds. So it might actually be the most effective thing possible to farm outdoor zones for your loot across the various spread. Unless you can monopolize like a whole pick of Lower Guk, because Lower Guk has like 20 named mobs. But your ability to do that will be pretty limited because other players are going to fight you for that space.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's pros and cons with that. There's solutions. And I think ultimately that it'll be at least as healthy, if not more healthy, than any previous progression server since pick zones were enabled.
Okay. And the Agent of Change, I'm unfamiliar with the Agent of Change because that's new since I started playing. I'm assuming that's what gives you a pick zone or an instance of how does that work?
Right. So the pick zone is generated just based on player numbers. And if it falls below a threshold, it'll close a pick zone. And then you just get popped into like the base pick, the real zone. Agent of Change is different. The Agent of Change exists only for raid content. So, this is actually a really important distinction. Raid mobs do not spawn in picks. So like there could be 50 picks of Solosec B. Nagafin is only in the original one.
Oh, okay.
And he will never spawn in the other ones.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Oh, wow. So now the Agent of Change you can use once a week and you can spawn your private instance of Sol B. In that instance, nothing will respawn. I think the EXP is nerfed in the instance from the Agent of Change. So you can't go there to farm EXP. You can't really farm named unless they just happen to spawn, luckily. And you can fight the raid mobs there, but you only get one per week, which is about 5 to 7 times slower than open world content. Nagafin spawns about, you know, every 24 to 48 hours in the open world. So everyone gets a swing at raid loot and gets to do all the raids in era to their ability. But people who are willing to do it the old fashioned way in the open world and engage in some competition, some friendly competition, have the opportunity to get much more raid loot.
So do you foresee your guild in this circumstance, let's say you're camping Nagafin, and he pops every 24 hours, then would you also attempt to do Sky as well and any other equivalent raid, like all simultaneously, or would you just sit on one and just keep farming that same one to get all the loot? How would that work out for you?
You traditionally you would attempt to do all of them through superior mobilization. So you'll have like your message of the day for the guild be like, okay, Nagafin is in window. He is this many hours in window. Lady Vox enters window in 3 hours. So make sure you are camped at Sol B, bound near permafrost, and have your potions if you can't bind there because you're a melee, so you can quickly gate there. There's that 24-hour variance roundabout, so things could get hairy, and sometimes they'll spawn really close. And it just becomes a matter of coordination and organization so that you can rapidly go from one raid mob or one target to the next.
Yeah.
There are times where you'll be in plain of sky, and you'll be like, you know, I don't know, on Spyrock Island, and Nagafin will spawn, and everybody jumps off. You go kill Nagafin, and then you port back up. You know what I mean?
You answered my second thing I was going to mention here. It was, was it related to the pick zone? So because you can't farm the same raid mob, you can't just go to another pick zone after you kill Nagafin. You answered that question. I was skeptical about that. But I guess raid mobs that are not raid, you could, let's say, go ahead and kill Crushbone in one instance and then go to the next pick zone and kill Crushbone again and go to the next pick zone and kill Crushbone again. That's how that would work, correct?
Yeah, it would work that way. But the thing is, if there are multiple picks open, it's because of the population demand, which means that most likely those camps are taken across every pick. So like usually if you have one of those primo camps like Frenzied Ghoul and Lower Guk, you don't want to pick out and try to get another one, because when you leave, someone's going to try to snipe your camp, and you might go into another group's camp. They might be like, you know, full, and they might have more DPS than you and kick your ass a little bit.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, it seems like your guild will have a monopoly on these raid mobs. So how will you deal with a lower end guild trying to make their way into that sphere? Would you just completely block them out, or the only option for them would be to join your guild, or would you share time with raid mobs? How's that going to work out for you?
So I would say that I don't think that Faceless will have a monopoly on raid mobs. We'll see. In the past we have on most servers that we've done. But I'll always say this is like, Faceless has always historically been, very, very willing to cooperate and work with people. The bottom line is someone has to ask, and so many times people assume the worst, they won't ask. And I mean, like, if the raid mob spawns and no one has talked to me about it, of course we're going to do everything in our power to kill it. And if someone shows up and attempts to race us there or kill it at the same time that we're trying to kill it, then it's friendly competition and the gloves come off. You know, it's a different scenario. But yeah, if someone hits you up beforehand and says, hey, Zayd, hey, Krim, we'd like to go for the next Nagfin, how do you feel about that? A lot of times the answer is going to be, have at it. You know what I mean?
Right. Now, why wouldn't you? I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say the problem is just most people never take the step to ask.
And what's preventing you, what's holding you back from saying, once you got a monopoly on the raid mobs, what's preventing you from saying, listen, if you want in on the raid mobs, you can go ahead and join my guild. Otherwise, you're not going to get a piece of any of it. What's to stop you from doing that?
Only my personal scruples.
Got it.
Yeah, I mean, come on. Not everybody's evil out there.
You're going to pay the money, you know, kiss the ring.
How much platinum do you have?
Yeah.
Okay. My next thing here I want to ask you is, since you know so much about EverQuest lore, what do you find to be the most reliable sources for EverQuest lore? Where do you go to for your lore?
Yep,
what are your top two or three?
Number one definitely is in the game itself, doing the quests, hailing mobs, talking to them. A lot of mobs can give you lore that have no quests or anything. Like, there's no reason you would ever talk to them. But in the old days, EverQuest was an adventure game, and you walked up to NPCs you didn't know. So you walked up to everybody and you hailed them. They said some words and you started spitting sentences back, trying to figure out what more they might have, right? And there's a lot of lore that way. There are a lot of quests, and if you read the Ala or the P99 wiki on the quest, you're like, how did people figure this out? What people leave out of those guides is that many other NPCs give you the starting point or give you hints towards the quests that exist. And over time, the player base has kind of lost a lot of those because you just, you know, you get the guide and you never mess with the part that is unnecessary. So my favorite source is definitely the game. Secondarily, I like the EverQuest RPG, like the D&D books. They're pretty good. Mm-hmm. I basically set up tiers of canonicity. Like, if something in a book is in conflict with what the game says, I err on the side of the game. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like, game is pure source. Then we have like dev comments and stuff like that. It's like tier two, and like some of the books and other third party materials become tier three, and you just try to sort it out. Or sometimes, you know, you just try to see what makes a little bit more sense. Cause some, you know, different people wrote the lore, and sometimes it goes off the deep end. And for my sanity, I try to ignore things like the fact that, the city of the Vashir was blasted physically with concussive force to the moon, and they all survived. I ignore that part of the story and assume it was a magical explosion that transported them. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, that's good to know moving forward, since we mentioned lore on our podcast. I was curious where you came from, because there's a lot of places that have conflicting lore, and there's some places that have very little lore that I could find. And then you have the comments section of, let's say, Alakazam, and you could find a lot of odd stuff there as well. But it's good to know. So I have a question that's... Go ahead.
I was going to say, I think part of that is a little bit... You'll see conflicting lore even in the game itself, and I think there's actually some beauty to that, because I think it's a reflection of the fact that the denizens of Norrath do not know everything, and they have their own different theories and ideas of why various forces and factions are at work the way they are. And sometimes as a player, it's up to you to take in what all the different factions and NPCs have to say and come up with your own idea of which one you think is most correct.
Right. makes it more human.
That's a good argument. I mean, it just happens in real life too when people are translating or relaying historical information. Just so much is lost, and people create new narratives. Next question I have for you is a fun one. So, if you could be one of the gods in EverQuest, which one would you be, and why? Which one is going to best represent Zade?
Oh man, that's a really tough one. I don't know. This, it's like you have to find an answer that is like not super egotistical and.
Egotistical. You get you. You're the god. You want to be the most willing to survive. I mean, this is survival of the fittest.
I would say I would be Zabux Ruk, the ungod. If you guys have ever done Planes of Power progression, he's the god at the end of Plane of Time. Your whole thing is to free Zabux Ruk because he's imprisoned there. And I like him because he's kind of like going against the flow of everything else. He's like, there's the way things are supposed to be, and he says no. He just goes against it all. So I like Zabux Ruk for that reason.
So if this was Dungeons, what's the game called, Anthony?
Dungeons and Dragons. I'm insulted. Dungeons and Dragons. Yo, God. Wow.
If this was Dungeons and Dragons, because you played Dungeons and Dragons 2, correct, Zade? If this was Dungeons and Dragons, what spectrum would he fall under? Like neutral or chaotic good? What spectrum would that god fall under?
I think he would be chaotic neutral, probably, yeah.
Okay. Cool.
Very interesting.
Yeah. And my last thing for you is I'm going to give you a hypothetical scenario here about your Mandalorian guild.
Yeah.
This is the guild where if you die, you delete your character. No questions asked, right?
Yep.
So let's say your character, you got a level 55 character, you're killing some mobs, everything's going good, you got a bunch of raid gear, and then the server crashes, right? And you're like, oh man, like they didn't tell us about this. So then like 3 hours later, you log in, but you're back in your home city. Like, this is weird. So you go back to your hunting spot and you see your corpse on the floor. What do you do?
That's a good question. We've had this come up kind of like that in Mandalorian. And what I tell the players is I say like, hey man, if you died in some like really out there crazy bullshit way, you know, someone's like, hey, my kid like unplugged my keyboard while I was playing. I'm like, you know what? We're all adults here. I'm going to leave the decision up to you, what you think you would do. Personally, I would delete the character, but I'm not going to judge you, at least publicly, for not deleting your character under this circumstance, if that's what really happened.
I guess the fifth time this week, your kid right. the keyboard.
Yeah, but hey, I mean...
I'd be like, hey, you got to come up with your own truth. I can't believe everything you see in here in Norath, man. You
know? Right. But because I formed Mandalorian and I lead that guild, I feel like I have added pressure to set the example to like the most extreme degree because I am the benchmark that people are going to use. So it's like if lightning struck my house, I'm like, I guess I'm deleting the character, you know?
Yeah, no, definitely. I agree. Now, let's say you guys go out on a raid and or to kill a mob and your second in command is there with you and you guys turn a corner and you see his corpse there on the ground.
Oh no.
So on this topic, because this is fascinating, what is like the one time you did die you're just like, I can't believe that, I can't believe I just lost it right now? Is there like a moment in a Mando character you had where you were just, you couldn't believe that you actually died?
Almost every many of the deaths, I'm like, no, that can't just have happened to me, right? There was one where I leveled up. I didn't realize it. The level gave me a new spell, which I didn't use. And I was in a fight. It was real close. But if I had used the new spell, it would have been trivial. And then I got rooted. I thought I was dead. So I just like, I'm on stream. I just throw my hands up and I tell chat, you know, like, hey, man, it looks like we're dead. I guess that sucks. And I didn't realize, like, moments later, my root broke and I could have ran and I would have survived.
Oh, man. Wow. That is rough.
Actually, I had a crazy death that there's a clip of where you can visibly just, I know this sounds like an excuse and trust me, I deleted the character anyway, but there was this huge lag spike. I just lose like 20 frames and I'm in the lava. Next thing I know, and I'm like trying to get out and I just die.
What zone?
Solosec A.
Oh yeah, we died in the lava.
You know, on that twisty bridge, I hit a lag spike and my character like did a 180 and jumped in the lava.
Oh man, that's rough.
How many characters do you think you had to delete so far in that guild for yourself?
If we only count the characters that make it past level 10, because you know it's really easy to die in those early levels. Probably like 9 or 12. I do a lot of not just Mandalorian, but solo self-found hardcore, where it's like I will only play by myself and I will not take any items and I also delete. So yeah, probably like 9 to 12 character deaths. And some of them have been like in the 40s when they died.
That's very impressive. But you said this is how the Discord server used to run?
The Discord server used to be like that, but it was also PvP turned on.
Oh, wow. Oh, my
God. Ouch. That's insane. Yeah,
we'll get attached to characters then.
Yeah. Holy crap.
When you get your character, I assume the best thing would be is you get like six guys to sit at level 15. You just go around killing everyone else together.
Okay. See?
Don't let them level up.
Yeah, don't let anybody else level up. That's it.
Yeah.
That's what I do. I would hire all those like people overseas that play EverQuest for you. I just say, hey, look, kill everybody. Let me level up. That's it. So, Carlos, what questions you got, man?
Yeah. So, before I start, I actually wanted to go back to what Derek said about the issues with, you know, the way mischief is going to happen when it comes to loot. And I had the big concern with that, with the fact that most of the people are just going to go to the easy zones and then they're just going to start looting those specific characters instead of just venturing out and seeing the world of Norath. Now, then I kind of realized that you have two kinds of people out there that play EverQuest, right? One that actually goes and explores the world. They like to go into different adventures and see the different zones, the dungeons, and actually find the lore. And then there's other people that actually just go to those zones just to get the loot. So either way, if the loot is randomized the way it is now, those folks that are actually playing EverQuest to explore and go to different zones, like kind of like us, we're still going to do that, even though we have the accessibility of just or getting those actual items with other kinds of mobs. We're still going to go to those zones. So I think it's actually going to help us out in the long run because of the fact that you're not going to have those people just sitting there camping those mobs in those different zones just for those items. So it gives us more of an open world for us to explore and actually kill those specific mobs that spawn in those zones. So I also have my reservations at first, but when you kind of think about it, you're still going to have those types of players that are going to go out there and move and go to the different zones and visit all of EverQuest. So yeah,
I think it'll be even better.
Right, exactly, because you don't have those people that are just so, you know, they have tunnel vision and all they care about is that specific item. I'm just going to sit there and get extremely upset if you actually go into that specific zone or that mob or even encounter them. So it makes it better for us, for the people that explore EQ. So that's actually very exciting. So I'm actually looking forward to Mischief and seeing how it actually plays out. So it is very exciting. Now, to wrap it up, I know that we've been talking for a long time. I had just a couple of questions. They're not really, they're pretty much out there. So the first one is, can you really share with us which classes you hold more dear to your heart when it comes to both enjoyability and the greatest satisfaction that you've gotten out of your EQ adventures?
Yeah, definitely. Traditionally, I've been a monk main for like 20 years. So monk was like my favorite class, definitely. And the reason I liked monk the most, other than like the role play aspect, I really like the idea of a monk. I really love pulling an EverQuest. I don't think there's any other game that I've found that really captures the way it feels to split pull on a monk in EQ. So for that reason, I loved monk. Monk's also just incredible DPS and everything. So that's good. But like recently I've become a little bit jaded, a little bit bored with the monk. So I branched out and I really love the necromancer just because there's so much they can do. It's another lore heavy class, you know. The versatility of the necro is really what gets me with them because they have a little bit of every class mixed in. They can feign death like the monk. They have dots, they can charm, they can mez like the enchanter. So it's a really powerful class. And then finally, I would say I really, really love the paladin. Pretty much roleplay wise, the same way that I like the monk, I like the paladin. You know what I mean? they're two sides of the same coin a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then the Paladin is known as one of the weaker, one of the most suboptimal classes in EQ. And for that reason, I like to take it and see, like, how far can we push this class? What can we do? So when I do those solo, self-found, like, hardcore runs, I tend to most often gravitate towards Paladin because I want to say, hey, like, this class that everyone looks down on, that everyone thinks sucks, look at all the potential it has. Look at everything you can bring out of this.
That's good.
Interesting. Yeah. Let me ask real quick about the monk since you brought that up. From a lore perspective, is there a reason why like only humans can be monks in the beginning and then Ixar, you know, in the classic days? Is there a lore reason for that, or is it just because?
It's got to do with like a self-mastery element, like an internal discipline kind of thing that is not seen in the other races. The Ixar find theirs through like almost a worship of pain and fear. And the humans find theirs through the pursuit of tranquility or just the pursuit of physical perfection. And if you look at both of those races, they're relatively militaristic by Nerathian standards.
Ah, very interesting. Thank you.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And for us, I mean, we have we casted a wide net when it comes to our favorite characters. Like I myself like the healer class. I currently play in a cleric, but I love the druids a lot. What about you, Derek and Anthony? Do you guys have one specific class that you favor over any other?
Yeah, my main on the PvP server was a necromancer. I got him to like level 80 or 85, and he was great. Like you said, he could do everything. And I soloed all the way up to that level. I mean, with ease. And then I like the necromancer and the wizard. Those are my two favorites. I've never played a monk. It never appealed to me. And a lot of the melee classes. But I'm more into caster classes and direct damage. What about you, Anthony?
Yeah, for me, I think my favorite, if I had to pick one, is actually the Shadow Knight. There's something about like the raw power. Like they're almost like a Darth Vader type character, you know, like right. they're, you know, impressive is all I got to say. Enchanter, I like, you control a lot. You do a lot of things. They don't really do much damage, but they have a lot of control and they can be the center of attention in a group. And then I also like Rangers, believe it or not. Like, I like the Ranger. I had a Ranger I played on live back in the day. I got him like level 69. I got their epic. Their bow and arrow was pretty good. You know, I don't know, they get trash a lot, but I liked them. I thought they were pretty cool.
You know what I always regretted about EQ? Not really regret because like I didn't do it, but the Ranger in EQ is much more Aragorn and a lot less Legolas, if you guys know what I mean. And I wish it had been a little bit more balanced or maybe even a little bit more towards Legolas style.
100%. Yeah, I do remember, like, I wish the bow was, like, their main source of damage because that would have been really cool to have, like, a ranged martial class in EverQuest. I think they tried to do that, but they just dropped the ball on that, you know.
Yep.
They're quite good in PvP. They're pretty good.
Yeah, you get your Skybow, like get a Bard and five Rangers with Skybows and just like run around Dreadlands. No one can do anything to you.
Why is that? I never played PvP, so you guys got to enlighten me. Is it because of fighting?
You have the range on all these people and you run fast. It's just, they just over and over and over again with the bow, they could wear you down pretty quick.
Gotcha. So if you see a party coming in the distance with a Bard and a bunch of Rangers just leg it up, okay? Mm-hmm. And one last one I have for you. And I know, like you said, you've been playing since you were 9. So you've been quite active in the EQ community, and you still are. So I kind of want to see if I can find your take when it comes to knowing the secret sauce for this game and what keeps the community as engaged as they are when it comes to EverQuest.
I would say one of the biggest pieces is the forced interaction. The more we instance things, even though people get to play more the way they might want to, the more you add instancing, the less the community has to interact with each other. EQ in its purest form is a very zero-sum game. Like in vanilla EQ, there is only one Guk. There is only one Lady Vox on the server per week. And whoever kills her gets her, and everyone else gets nothing. But that forces you to interact with everyone else. Cause like, hey, if you're the other guild that wants to raid, you have to work out a deal or you have to get better than the other guild. And eventually as tensions rise and drama happens, you reach a stalemate between guilds where no one can raise the bar any higher. And then it's like, okay, well, let's work out a plan. Let's have an agreement. And unfortunately, that part of the game is something that like a lot of players don't see unless you happen to be an officer or a leader of a guild. But they see it at a lower level with camps and fighting over group content and stuff. And even though sometimes people are rubbed the wrong way, if you're a social sort of person, there is an element of that process that you cannot get anywhere else in MMOs. It's totally unique to EQ in my experience. And that has made the community what it is. And even today, though we have pick zones and we have agents of change, we still feel the echoes of that, you know, 15 to 20 years of the other style influencing our community, and our interactions today. And so I really think it's that. It's that forced interaction. It's the fact that you and I must find a way to work together so that we can both achieve what we want. And that's the best part of EQ.
Right. I have to agree with you. It also, like you said, but also the forced interaction, since, like you said, it's a zero-sum game, and we're all in it together. And most of the times, you also need the help of others in order to try to tackle either a boss or mob, or if you, like I say, if you have a camp stake, maybe they can bring you in and you can partake in that specific like session. So, yeah, that tight knit community of folks that just love the punishment and the pain of it what EQ really is, and it just forces us, like you said, to continue to be social. And now with Discord and everything, I think it just makes it a lot better and a lot easier for people to reach out and connect. And that's why I still play, and that's why I'm sure you still play, and everybody here in this call is because of that, because of the fact that it's a lovely game. Just the fact that it's still going for 20 years, and Lord knows how much longer.
Yep, and EQ, it really is all about the friends and the enemies that you made along the way.
Well, I'll try to avoid that, but yeah, very true.
Absolutely. Yeah. We can talk to
Ever Nerd.
Yeah. Ever Nerd's got a list of enemies a mile long, I'm sure. And you know, with that, we're going to wrap it up here. And Zaid, I want to thank you really for joining us here today. I know you're busy yourself between your work commitments and your other commitments online and whatnot. But before we leave, can you remind our listeners if they want to find you, your presence online, learn more about your guild, where should they be looking?
Right. So you can see me at twitch.tv/ZaidGod, ZaidEGod. I stream every now and then right now, but there's all the links to my other social media platforms and stuff there. If you want to see more about Faceless, or in this case, Faceless Virtue, our Mischief Guild, you can check out the official EQ forums, the guild section. We've always got something there. We've got a link to our Discord. And a shout out to my buddy Krim, who is my co-leader in this. He's the founder of In Virtue IV, which is like one of the longest standing EverQuest guilds of all time. So great company here with Faceless Virtue this year.
Awesome. I know we'll all be watching you on Twitch, and also I'll be in the guild. So I'll be looking forward to that. And for everybody out there listening, thank you again for listening to our show. We hope we've earned your subscription and 5-star rating and review. And as always, we'd love to hear from you. And you can reach us on Twitter at Return2EQ. That's at Return2EQ. And we hope to see you next week again for our regularly scheduled show, where we're going to be discussing the Gnome Crew's descent into Soulsec A. So kind of the lava thing we talked about earlier. That does happen in our episode. People do die in the lava. So we'll all see you there. Take care. Have a great time.